Hi, I'm Kiana Snooks. I'm with the American College of Physicians in the Clinical Programs and Quality Improvement Division there. I've been working there for about 5 years, and I'm the research coordinator on different studies from cardiovascular risk through COPD, through diabetes, and so forth. Okay, I'm here today to talk to you about the ACP-NET COPD study on chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It's an example of facilitating practice change in primary care. All right, the financial disclosures, the ACP-NET staff have received grants from the following organizations: Boehringer Ingelheim, Endo Pharmaceuticals, AstraZeneca, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, Atlantic Philanthropies. Not all for this one study, okay? Which would have been great, though. All right, a little bit of background on ACP-NET. ACP-NET is ACP's Quality and Performance Improvement Program. Well, network is designed for individual and or practice teams. The projects focus on specific disease conditions and providing educational opportunities that lead to better patient care. All right, it currently has over 2,000 members who are enrolled in the practice-based research network. Two-thirds are practices in solo and small practices. Over one-third have EHRs. And it includes internists, internal medicine subspecialists, and also other practitioners, so nursing practitioners and so forth. Now, the core principles of ACP-NET were to teach physicians how to implement these clinical quality improvement techniques and tools in their practices, to study their attitudes and knowledge and beliefs about various conditions, to educate them on evidence-based best practices, to help them analyze their practice patterns through feedback reports, conference calls, practice-based coaching, and to effectively improve the clinical practice, thereby improving patient management. Now, the purpose of this particular study was twofold. We wanted first to understand the attitudes and knowledge of the physicians in managing their patients with COPD. The second was also to compare what they believed they were doing with what was actually going on in their practices. All right, now the context of this, why look at COPD? In a larger scheme of things, it is the fourth leading cause of death right now in the U.S. In 2004 alone, there was an economic burden of $37.2 billion. It is underdiagnosed and underreported illness. Okay, and multiple quality gaps exist, not just the ones that appear here. I am skipping. Now, the design of the ACP-NET projects are multifaceted. They include data collection. This is to give physicians a snapshot of what's going on in their practice, because it's great to tell someone you need to improve something, but you have to know what to improve. All right, there's also QI, quality improvement coaching calls, email exchanges that provide education support, and there's also peer advice, which seems to be very valuable to them, where peers who are involved in the same sort of quality improvement programs help them to learn best strategies. There's also an online education module, which provides them with the information for evidence-based best practices, so they don't have to go looking for it themselves. The guidelines are there. The tools are there. Abstraction tools for their patient data is there. All right, and there's also a survey to gain physicians' perspectives on their practice patterns. Now, the quality improvement coaches that we have in these studies, they are subject matter experts in their fields. They're physicians who have been through the programs themselves also, so they can relate to the physicians that are involved now. They have extensive practice redesign experience. They're active clinicians, and they actually help us to develop the agendas for the different projects. And they are available for phone and email consultations with the participants in the projects. Now, this particular study, over the course of the COPD project, physicians were asked to, of course, they had to complete an informed consent. There was a pre-survey just to gauge their attitudes and knowledge with treatment of COPD. They had to complete a baseline data abstraction, 35 patients, and they received a feedback report, which shows their percentages of whether they were doing spirometry readings and so forth. They attended conference calls. There was a beginning one to start teaching them about what's known as the PDSA cycle, so, you know, how to implement small cycles of change within their practice so they don't feel overwhelmed in trying to, you know, integrate practice change improvement. They completed educational modules online. There's a progress report where they got to list, detail their goals and how they plan to go about them, what barriers they were running into, and so forth. So when they attended the advanced conference calls, they could talk it over with their peers, with the subject matter expert who could help lead them in the right direction of, if they were coming up against barriers, then what should their next step be? They also completed an endpoint data abstraction to see, okay, now since I've integrated this change, how am I looking? You know, did it work for me? And if not, where do I want to go from here? And there's also a post-survey, same as the pre-survey, just to, again, to look at their attitudes and their beliefs, progress report, and one of the incentives where they receive CME and Part 4 maintenance of certification credit from the American Board of Internal Medicine for recertification. All right, now the practice measures, by the way, they are based on national guidelines and approved performance measures from the Physician Consortium for Performance Improvement, the National Quality Forum, and the ABIM's Practice Improvement Module. It's kind of small. Okay, if you can't read that, that's just an example of one of the abstraction forms. It asks the basic questions about gender, race, whether they did a spirometry reading on that patient, what was their oxygenation, what was the oximetry reading, what medications they were using, and so forth. And as for the surveys, to gauge their attitudes, just ask general questions about how did they manage the exacerbation of their COPD, do they prescribe antibiotics, things of that nature? Do they have a spirometer in the office? So how often do they use it? Just to look at things like that, compare it to the answers that we receive from their actual data. An example of the progress report where they just list their goals, how they plan on achieving their goals, and if they're approaching any barriers, and what are their plans for the future, how many total. And we did ask how many total hours they're actually putting into this. Okay, we do care about that. Now, as for the conference calls that we're talking about, they are the crux of the process because it's a journey, definitely a journey in performance improvement. You're teaching practices not just, okay, this one time we want you to do this and you get credit for it, but how would you do this in the future if you wanted to check on the status of how your patients are doing, how you're treating your patients, not just with COPD, but with other ailments also. So introduce the Plan, Do, Study, Act introduction, the chronic care module, which is pretty much getting patients informed, providing doctors with the resources also for a more productive interaction. Looked at patient self-management. And we use the physician data as a conversation starter. So again, like the first call happens after they do their baseline, they receive their feedback reports, and now they know how they stand with their data. And they also learn how to produce run charts, which help them to track their improvement over time. Now that you have an idea what the project will entail, let's look at some of the data from it. I'm going to give you a limited look at the data only because it's about to go to the publication, so we can only provide some of it. For this pilot study, there were 17 physicians who took part in both time sets, the pre-intervention and the post-intervention. The majority were male, white, and non-Hispanic. Over a third had EHR, and 71.4% had computers in their practice. Now, select survey results. Many of the physicians were using clinical decisions were based on the guidelines, according to the surveys. Grand rounds were about a one-fifth, and 52.9% in the baseline of 41.2% at the post-intervention were using other physician reports. Also, the diagnosis of COPD, for most of them, they ascertained was made with spirometry readings. There was also signs and symptoms that were used for diagnosis. Diagnosis from other physicians was definitely less. And history and their physical. Data from the charts. In a baseline, 23.5% of all the patients had hospitalizations in the past 12 months. At the follow-up, it was only 19.4%. Oxygenation measurement went up from 44.8% to 70.6% at the follow-up. And alpha-1 antitrypsin levels checked only 2.7% at the baseline, went up to 20% at the follow-up. And exercise recommendations also went up. Now, for a vast majority, did have the FEV1 FVC ratio that was consistent with a classification of COPD. So they were looking at that and using that to help them with their diagnosis. Now, as stated earlier, part of the facilitating change in the practice lie in comparing the attitudes and beliefs about treatment to what was really going on. Because again, a lot of them think they're providing expert care, so you have to at least show from their data that it's not exactly happening. So looking at this comparison, for spirometry, for example. And to pre-intervention, 94.1%, according to the survey, said they were using it. According to the audit, 56.9%. Okay. And similar at the post-intervention, 100% according to the survey, and 58.1% were actually using it according to the data. Pulse oximetry exertion was a similar occurrence, 58.8% at the pre-intervention, 14.6 according to the charts, and you get the picture. One anomaly, and only one, seemed to be the pulse oximetry at rest, where more, according to the chart data, were performing it than they thought. And peak flow assessment, 11.8% at pre-intervention, according to the survey, we're using it, and according to chart audits, 1.3%. So it goes on with that. The conclusion from this was, of course, there were differences between the survey and what was going on in the practices themselves, but also showed that in between, when they had the interventions with the quality improvement coaching calls, with the educational modules that were online, and with setting their goals for themselves and putting in changes, there were significant improvements seen in measured oxygenation, alpha-1 antitrypsin levels, inhaler use instruction, and peak flow assessment, which may be due to what their specific goals were. And while the findings are promising, for the intervention, the study unfortunately has been plagued by difficulties with recruitment. And it's not the only one that's been plagued. There's ACPNet's Adult Immunization Project also. And in the current economy, the problem maintaining funding to test for sustainability of the project is also an issue. However, the physicians are voicing that there is definite value in the peer-to-peer coaching. They love to have access to the subject matter experts over the phone and via email. The value of the feedback reports. They love having a visible representation of what's going on in their practice. It really helps to drive the fact home, and they actually do present them to their teams at the workplace. Okay. And there's also the importance of involving the entire practice seems to be a predictor of success also when they tend to involve, to delegate more or to, you know, have the involvement of the nurses and of other practitioners, it works out a lot better for them. So our next steps would be to increase the sample size and refine the intervention to include webinars. We are doing that. And any questions?
Questions?
Well, let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. So maybe you said this in the beginning and I missed it, but mm-hmm. how do you actually identify physicians to participate? And how much do you know about whether they are part of, you know, HMOs or other types of organizations? And how can you isolate the effects that you might be having mm-hmm. from all the other potential input that or training, quality improvement, whatever physicians may be getting elsewhere?
We actually do collect information on their backgrounds. So for actually, yes, all the participants that were in this study, we do have information on the type of insurance carriers that their patients have, whether they have EMRs, EHRs, what part of the country they're in, so we look at it regionally also, those different information. Again, this is only a snapshot of some of the data that's actually going to be published right now. And first part of your question was?
Well, yeah. I was wondering whether these physicians are mm-hmm. actually part of other types of organizations.
Some of them are. The recruitment process is multifaceted. Again, we recruit through industry participants, whether it's at our own internal medicine session that happens every year, through marketing, you put advertisements in other journals that other physicians will read, things of that nature, and they contact us to let us know they're interested.
Thank you very much.
Okay.